two AI coding agents working in parallel on the same codebase. Each one handed a complementary feature to build. Good models, both of them. And the intuition is obvious, right? Two workers split the job, finished faster than either could alone. They didn't finish faster, they finished worse. On a benchmark built exactly for this, two agents cooperating on one shared project, the pair landed a joint success rate of under 30%. A single agent doing both tasks one after the other hit 57%. So splitting the work in parallel didn't just fail to help, it cut the success rate roughly in half. That result has a name, the curse of coordination, and the team behind today's paper had a fix. The paper went up on Archive on May 11th, 2026, and we're recording on May 28th. Quick note before we get into it, this episode is AI generated. I'm Bella, my co-host is Tyler, and we're both AI voices from 11 Labs. The script was written by Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.8, and the show has no affiliation with either company. The paper is called Shepherd, a runtime substrate empowering meta agents with a formalized execution trace. And the reason that curse of coordination number matters is that the fix isn't a smarter prompt. It's a new way of holding on to what an agent is doing while it does it.
And just to finish the cold open with a number, they got that pair back up to nearly 55%. From under 30 to nearly 55, closing something like 90% of the gap to the solo agent's ceiling. So the parallelism penalty is almost entirely recoverable. The real question is what they had to build to recover it. And that turns out not to be about coordination at all. It's a much older problem.
So here's the setup the authors are reacting to. We're building more and more systems where one agent acts on other agents, a supervisor watching workers, an optimizer rewriting a workflow that failed, a training loop shaping an agent's behavior. The paper has a name for these, meta agents, higher order agents that operate over other agents. And every one of them needs the same thing, the ability to reach into another agent's execution while it's running and manipulate it. And today, that's miserable to build. The platforms agents run on were designed to serve the one agent that's running, keep its files, keep its state. They were not built to hand a second agent the levers. So every research team that wants a supervisor reinvents the same plumbing. Parse the transcript by hand, snapshot the environment yourself, rerun modified code from scratch to see what would have happened. Bespoke, every single time. The author's move is to ask, what's the right abstraction for an agent's execution such that a second agent can hold it, look at it, copy it, rewrite it, cleanly and cheaply? And their answer is borrowed from functional programming, an idea about 50 years old.
Functional programming feels like a strange place to look for an answer about live AI agents. What's the connection, Bella?
It's actually a clean one. Think about the difference between a recipe and cooking. The recipe is just data. You can read it, copy it, edit step four, reason about it, all without dirtying a single pan. The cooking is the part that makes a mess in the kitchen. Functional programming's whole discipline is keeping those two strictly separate. What a computation describes versus how its effects actually hit the world. And once you've drawn that line cleanly, you get superpowers. You can replay the recipe, swap one step, log everything, intercept an action right before it fires, all without recooking from scratch. Shepherd's bet is that the trick we use for tame, ordinary code should work on wild, world-changing AI agents, too. It takes four things about an agent and makes each one first class, something you can hold as a value and pass around. What the agent is, what it does, where it runs, and what it has done. And the way to picture the whole thing is Git, version control. Most people know it for code. Imagine that, but instead of tracking changes to files, it records every single thing the agent does. Every model call, every tool use, every change to its environment, each one a commit. Every time you branch off to try something, that's a branch. Any moment in the agent's past is a checkout you can return to, exactly. Its history becomes a graph you can walk. That's the core idea. A running agent stops being an opaque process you watch from outside and becomes structured data a second agent can hold, execute, copy, and rewrite.
And here's where I'd normally get skeptical, because that Git picture sounds lovely, until you remember what you're actually forking. Git branches are cheap because text diffs are tiny. But an agent state isn't just its conversation transcript, it's everything it touched in the world. The files it wrote, the processes it started, the services it poked. To truly capture where an agent is right now, you need the conversation and the whole file system and environment snapshot coupled together. So branching an agent should mean copying gigabytes, and that should be slow. It isn't. That's the load-bearing engineering claim, and it's the number that made me take the paper seriously. They tested forking on real sandbox images spanning two orders of magnitude, from 42 megabytes up to 5.8 gigabytes. Forking took about a seventh of a second. And here's the part, regardless of size. The 42 megabyte image and the 5.8 gigabyte image forked in essentially the same time.
Regardless of size. So how? If you're not copying the data, what are you doing?
Copy on write layering. Instead of duplicating the file system, you stack a new transparent layer on top and only record what actually changes. The same idea that lets Docker images stack. So the fork cost is basically constant. You're not paying for the gigabytes, you're paying for the bookkeeping. Compare that to the naive approach, a full copy of the big image, 53 seconds. So we're talking almost 200 times faster per branch. And in agent terms, a single fork is about 2 to 3% of one agent turn. A turn is dominated by the model call, which is around 5.5 seconds of actual thinking. So branching the agent's entire world costs roughly nothing compared to a single thought. That's the unlock. Once branching is free, a whole class of things you'd never do because they were too expensive suddenly become routine.
There's a second cost that could have killed this, and it's on the model side. When you fork a branch and keep going, you're resending a long prompt to the language model. Normally, that's expensive. You pay per token. But providers cache the work they've already done on a prompt, and the cache only hits if the new prompt begins with exactly the same bytes as one they've already seen. One character off, and you pay full price again. Because a forked branch keeps the parent's prefix byte for byte identical, the provider's cache just resolves it. They measured about 95% cache reuse from the second branch onward. So replaying a fork is nearly free on the model side too. Think of a print shop that keeps the first 200 pages of your document on the press and only resets the type for the pages you actually changed. So that's the substrate. And the way the authors argue it's genuinely general is clever. They build three meta agents, and each one leans on a different property of the system. The first is the simplest, and it's the fix for the curse of coordination we opened on. The property here is observation without perturbation. The supervisor subscribes to the worker's stream of actions, and every action gets appended to an immutable list. Because that list is append-only, the worker behaves byte for byte identically, whether or not anyone is watching. The paper checks this literally. The worker's message list is character for character the same, supervised or not. Watching costs the worker 0 tokens. It's a one-way mirror that adds no weight to the room. Now layer on a second trick. Every action splits into two events, an intent, when the worker decides to do something, and an outcome, when the world actually responds. That gap is the whole game. The supervisor can read the intent, "I'm about to run a destructive delete," decide it shouldn't happen, and kill it before the outcome ever materializes. It's the assistant who sees the email sitting in your drafts and your finger moving towards send and stops you before it leaves the outbox.
But that only works for things you can catch in time. What about the email that's already gone?
Right. And the paper is honest about exactly that. Effects come in tiers. Reversible ones, like file writes, roll back natively. Compensable ones, like a database write, roll back through a handler you supply. And irreversible ones, sending an email, making a payment, even making the model call itself, those can only be recorded. You can't undo them. but you can gate them before they fire. So the supervisor's power is real but bounded. It can prevent, and it can rewind the reversible damage to the last safe point. It cannot unsend. And with that, subscribe to two workers, inject guidance when one drifts, reroute a stuck worker from the other's state, or just discard a worker that's gone down a hole. That's how they took the curse of coordination from under 30% back up to nearly 55. The supervisor was a strong model watching two cheap workers. The second application is my favorite because it turns debugging an agent into something that actually feels like science. They call it counterfactual replay optimization. Here's the problem it solves. You've got a multi-step agent pipeline and it fails. You have an idea for a fix. The normal way to test it is to rerun the whole pipeline and see if the score goes up. But language models are stochastic, so the rerun is noisy. The score might move because your fix helped, or because you got a luckier roll of the dice. You genuinely can't tell. Counterfactual replay does something cleaner. It rewinds to the first moment your edit would actually change anything, freezes everything before that point exactly as it was, and replays only the part downstream. Everything held constant except the one thing you changed. It's the difference between a controlled lab experiment, one variable, everything else fixed, and rerunning the entire messy world and hoping the difference came from your change. And there's one case study that makes this feel almost human. They had a fact-checking workflow that needs to find a bridge page, a Wikipedia article that links two facts together. The workflow kept failing, and counterfactual replay let them diagnose why. It turned out the agent was finding the right page, and then throwing it away. A later stage was only allowed to pick its answer from a pre-computed list, and the correct page wasn't on that list. So the workflow kept identifying the right evidence and then discarding it. The paper has a wonderful phrase for this. The workflow was accidentally candidate closed. One edit, letting those recovered pages count as evidence, and coverage on the dev set jumped from about 45% to 69% in a single change.
And there's a detail in there I really liked, because it cuts against how these optimizers usually behave. At one point, the system had two candidate edits. One scored a perfect mark on the targeted training examples. The other scored lower on those same examples, but it was more general. And the optimizer picked the more general one. It chose the fix that would generalize over the one that overfit the test it was being graded on. That's the opposite of the usual failure mode. And the headline on this approach is the wall clock. Because you're only replaying the affected suffix instead of the whole pipeline, computation reuse climbs over 60% later in a run. On the most execution-heavy benchmark they tried, the two competing optimizers both failed to beat the baseline at all. And this one improved on it using the least wall clock of the three. The third application is the one furthest from the core idea. And it's where the cheap forking really earns its keep. Reinforcement learning. Quick primer on the problem. When you train an agent on a long task with reinforcement learning, it takes dozens of steps and then gets a single reward at the very end. Pass or fail. And then you have to figure out which of those dozens of steps deserves the credit, or the blame. The standard method smears that one final reward evenly across every action. So in a run that failed, a genuinely brilliant move gets blamed exactly as much as the blunder that doomed it. That's the credit assignment problem, and it gets worse the longer the task. The fix here uses a clone analogy, and it's exact. Instead of one report card at the end of a long project, imagine you could clone yourself at a specific moment, several identical copies, sharing the same exact history up to that point, and let each copy make different choices afterward. Then you compare how the clones turn out. Because they were identical right up to the split, the difference in their outcomes isolates the quality of the decisions made after the split, cleanly separated from all the luck that came before. So the meta agent picks a turn, forks the rollout at that exact state, samples a handful of sibling continuations, and grades the local decisions by how the siblings diverge. And the only reason this is even possible is the cheap byte-identical fork. You're cloning the agent's entire world, file system and all, at a chosen moment. In a toy stateless setting that's trivial, in a real agent that writes files and mutates services, you need exactly what Bella described earlier. The result? It roughly doubles the gains over the flat method. And the mechanism is visible during training. You get higher reward variance, which sounds bad but is actually good. Wider spread means more informative gradients, more signal about what actually mattered. The flat method slowly saturates. This one keeps the useful signal band wide.
And notice the through line across all three. Tyler, this is the part I think is the real argument. Live supervision uses non-perturbing observation. The optimizer uses byte-identical replay. The training loop uses cheap branching. Three different properties of the same substrate, three applications that would each have been a separate infrastructure project before. That's how you argue an abstraction is general. You show it pays off in places that don't look alike.
It's a genuinely clean argument. And this is where I want to be honest about the gap between what's demonstrated and what's framed. Because the paper basically hands you the critique itself. Every one of these results, the authors call a proof of existence, not a controlled head-to-head. And once you hold that label up to the headline numbers, a few things wobble. Take the curse of coordination recovery, under 30 up to nearly 55. That didn't come from Shepard alone. It came from Shepard plus a very strong supervisor, a frontier model babysitting two cheap workers. The paper doesn't test whether you'd get the same uplift without the substrate, or whether a weaker, cheaper supervisor would close any of the gap. So the substrate's actual causal contribution to that number is, honestly, unmeasured. The headline conflates the plumbing with the policy running on top of it.
Though, in fairness to them, that's sort of the nature of the claim. They're not arguing Shepard makes agents smarter. They're arguing it makes a whole class of meta-agents cheap to build and fast to run. The smart supervisor is the point. The substrate is what let them wire it up in a few lines instead of a few months.
That's fair. And I'd accept it more easily if the economics were characterized. Because they concede that for short tasks, the meta-agent's token cost can exceed the workers. You've got a frontier model watching a cheap model. And whether that pays off depends entirely on the cost ratio between them, which the paper explicitly doesn't pin down. The wall clock savings on the optimizer are real, but they don't account for the dollar cost of the strong model doing all that diagnosing. Two more, quickly. The counterfactual replay trick has a stated failure mode. It only saves work when your edit's effects stay local. Change something used in every single step, like a system prompt threaded through every tool call, and the affected suffix is the entire trajectory. The cache buys you nothing. And that's not hypothetical. It's exactly the cold start behavior they see on the first session of every dataset, where reuse starts down around 1% before it climbs. And the formal methods angle claims less than the framing suggests. There's a lean mechanization. They verified a small core of the system mathematically. But the appendix is admirably candid that the thing they actually verified is a little trace machine, and the production runtime, the real Python, the Docker operations, the multi-branch replay, the recovery, the scheduling, is explicitly not verified. So the formal veneer is doing more rhetorical work than load-bearing work.
None of which I'd call fatal, though, Tyler. It's the normal gap in systems research between we built a useful thing and it works on representative tasks, and we proved this thing is the cause of the improvement. The paper lives firmly in the first camp, by its own admission, and the engineering underneath isn't in question. The fork really is that fast. The replay really is byte identical. Those aren't framing. Those are measurements. So why care if it's infrastructure with mediated impact? Here's the bet. As agentic systems get longer lived, more stateful, and more consequential, agents that run for days, that touch real services, that act on each other, execution-level control stops being a nice-to-have and becomes a core abstraction. The way version control became fundamental for code, or type systems did. Shepherd is a bid to define what that layer looks like.
And there's one more result that hints at where this goes. They had a meta agent read completed runs and look for a shorter path. And most of the time, it found one. Something like 2/3 to 4/5 of passing runs admitted a strictly shorter rerun. One bug fix that originally took the agent 80 steps got compressed to 7.
80 to 7? But how do they know that's real insight and not just a luckier roll of the dice?
They ran the control. Best of 5 resampling, just rolling the dice more times, barely shortened anything. The hindsight hint, actually reading what happened and finding the redundancy, genuinely did. So it isn't luck. It's an agent looking back over its own history as data and finding the dead weight. Which is only possible because the history is data in the first place.
Which is the whole paper in one image, really. Once a running agent's execution is something you can hold and inspect, a value, not a fog, you can do science on it. Watch it without disturbing it. Rerun it with one thing changed. Look back and find the shorter path. The paper is Shepherd, out of Northeastern and Stanford. The show notes have a link to it and a few related reads if this caught you.
And if you want the full transcript with every term defined in line, plus the links over to the other episodes that share these ideas, that's all on paperdive.ai.
This has been AI Papers, a deep dive. Thanks for spending it with us.